Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and join our Patreon for just $2 a month where you get exclusive episodes. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the prison inmate.
Dude.
He's almost got the matching hair for, you know, just on the sides. Yeah.
I was sitting out on the truck today. I started my shift at 7 a.m., but went on the truck route starting at 9:30, didn't come back until like freaking 8:20. So I was out for 11 hours, pretty much.
That's crazy, so, dude.
You worked
pretty hard today.
Your body's going to feel great in the morning.
Yeah. That's why I preemptively took some ibuprofen. So
you're going to sleep good.
That's why as I get older,
I keep
Epsom salt in the house as I get older, because sometimes your body just needs it.
Mm-hmm.
That shit works wonders, man. You know, I'm man enough to admit that I will take a bath with Epsom salt. That shit makes your body feel good.
I have a bag of it. I'm going to have to give it a try.
Amongst other things that make your body feel good. But Epsom salt, no, I swear. And the trick with Epsom salt is you got to make your bath really warm, as hot as you can stand it, because then it helps get into your pores better. But, man, that shit does work. I mean, I feel good if I take a good bath with that. That's a little old man trick there.
Old man trick.
Especially like your feet and knees. Oh man, that shit makes your knees and feet feel so much better. But I have not done anything as exciting as that. I worked a couple days this week for inventory and I've been off. It doesn't feel like a vacation though, because I had to work a couple of days. And then I've been running some errands and trying to get some things done, and still feel like I've gotten not jack shit accomplished for some reason. I don't know. My anxiety has been a little bit through the roof with this few days off. That's okay. A couple more days before I go back to work. I'm going to cook a brisket tomorrow, and that should taste good. And if you guys are nice, I will make plates for y'all to come grab some brisket. Because it's a huge brisket. I can't eat it all.
I think my friend, the Polish Mark, is doing the... Polish Mark, because I know two Marks who are in my inner circle of friends. I nickname him Polish Mark, and then nickname Mark R. Mark here, German Mark. So
it would be like Badass Mark or something instead, but yeah, I'll take it.
Okay, I'll call you Jedi Mark, and I'll call the other one Sith Mark. Because he's really, every time we talk about Star Wars, he's always have an inclination towards Sith.
Yeah. Ooh, excuse me. But
I don't know. Polish Mark and German Mark flows better for me.
But yeah, so a couple more days and back to work Monday, but you know, it is what it is. Now I'll go on vacation again in June, so only a couple months, so not too bad. I get a lot of vacation time, so I can't really complain. And I was out.
Same here.
2 weeks in January, half a week in February with a snowstorm. So it's like I have had quite a bit of time off in early 2021.
Wait a minute. Were you forced to use your vacation for the storm?
Oh, no. I didn't use any vacation time. I just took no pay those 3 days. Well, they still owe me for my COVID pay. I haven't been paid yet.
I
called the number again and I talked to the guy again, sent the information in again. So hopefully in this next week, I'm getting a little... I'm one of those people that when it comes to that kind of stuff at work, I'm pretty patient. You know, some people, you know, freak out, they get in the manager's face and bitch and complain. I understand things happen, so I'm kind of patient with it. But now that it's getting on... I went back to work February 4th, so we're getting almost 2 months. Now I'm starting to get a little frustrated. It's like, okay, come on, pay me, you know?
So, yeah, when it goes that long.
Yeah, you know. two or 3 weeks, 4 weeks, sure, but you're getting on 2 months. It's like, come on, stop fucking
show me the money. Pay.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you go over the middle. You deserve it. You want the quad.
The quam.
There you go. The quam. Ah, there. Ah, quam.
mess up his word.
The Quam.
Ah, it's a good fucking movie.
Very good movie.
One of the, yeah.
Did go ahead.
I was.
Yeah. So that's our week.
Yeah. Let's get into the show, man, because there's quite a bit to talk about with the feature film and another movie that hit HBO Max this week. And as always, we start the show with Download This. And I really didn't watch anything this week except for the movie on HBO Max. And then Marvel Disney Plus premiered The Falcon Winter Soldier today. I did watch that.
I haven't watched it yet.
I guess along because you had a long work day, you didn't get to watch it. I won't say too much. We'll talk about it next week when both of y'all watch. I know Matt hasn't watched it all either. We were talking pre-show.
I'll watch it tomorrow.
It's Marvel. I mean, you know, it's the quality you expect. It's just one episode. Doesn't break any new ground. It's a lot of setup. But it felt kind of like revisiting old friends after Endgame because this takes place directly. It's more of a sequel to Endgame than WandaVision was. It's more in that vein of Spider-Man Far From Home with the events that are taking place right after Endgame. So that's all I'll say about it so far. But, you know, it's got to let it play out. Not much happens in the first episode. But it looks like it's going to be a fun show. You know, and that's what I have to say about it. And it is high quality Marvel. There's a great action sequence at the beginning that feels like a film. You know, it's not just television. That's one thing I am appreciative so far with Marvel is they're definitely putting their money in these TV shows to make them fit seamlessly with the cinematic universe and not feel cheap.
And I like that GSP came back, reprised his role, but he doesn't do as much hand-to-hand combat here like he did in Winter Soldier. Nice to see him back. One of my, probably my favorite top, and definitely in my top 10 of all-time favorite MMA fighters. GSP was really good. He could do it all. They don't make them like they used to.
I have no fucking clue who it is, so I don't care. I mean, that's just
you. You know the guy who fought Captain America and
I know who he is as far as the person, but as far as his MMA career, I don't fucking know. I mean, okay. But that's about it, man, for me. I mean, did you watch anything additional, Matt, besides Justice League?
I did. There was a sale on Vudu on a few things, and Jackie had not seen Captain Marvel, so I bought Captain Marvel, and we watched that.
You know, you can watch that on Disney Plus.
Yeah, I know, but I don't own it. You know, I want to own it.
But my thing is, here's my thing with digital copies. If you're gonna own it, then own it. Where if I can watch it streaming, I'm not gonna buy it digitally. Because you're buying the same movie you can watch streaming that you're paying $6 a month for on Disney Plus. Actually, $7 now. It just went up.
That's fair. So,
you know, so that's my thing. If I'm going to own it, I'm going to own it physically. You know.
Oh, and Red Heat. I did watch Red Heat.
I'm sorry.
And there's a lot of Arnold's butt in there at the beginning.
That's such a bad movie, though.
It is.
It's not one of his better movies. It's pretty terrible.
Cocaineum.
Like, it doesn't even make, and like the half the movie doesn't even make sense. It's like the plot is just, it's a,
they don't even explain why he teams up with the American,
right? He just sort of, yeah, it's so bizarre. That's one of those,
like, weird, well, yep, yeah, now Arnold's here. He just got done beating up people in a bar and ripping off a dude's, you back know, when prosthetic they used to
sell
leg.
They used to try to sell movies by a star's name instead of thinking, oh, maybe this movie should make sense.
Yeah.
A lot
so
of
where are you at, Matt, on your kaiju rabbit hole?
I still have to watch Shin Godzilla. It's just been with my new schedule, I'm still adjusting. So it's just been a crazy week. I didn't get to watch Shin, but that's my next one. I'll definitely watch it this week. I didn't watch much outside of the. Of course, I think we all watched the Snyder's Cut.
Yeah. So let's get into that then.
Yeah.
Because I know I haven't. If I did watch something other than Zack Snyder's cut, I've already forgotten because I freaking stayed up and did a binge on it. So
yeah, they
just kind of celebrating it.
Let's go back and tell the story a little bit. You know, in 2017, we got the Justice League film, which was
the Whedon
Josh Whedon came in and finished the film after Zack Snyder's daughter passed away, and he backed off from the project along with some studio pressure to cut the film and finish the film quicker while he was dealing with his daughter's death. And so they brought Josh Whedon in and to finish the film, and Whedon reshot quite a bit of the film and edited down what was left into a 2-hour movie that I'm not gonna sit here and knock the Whedon cut too hard, because after watching the Snyder cut, it's amazing that he was able to cut it to a film that actually makes sense. I mean, the Whedon cut, there's a story there, not a very good one, but there's a story. At least it makes sense. There's some decent action sequences, mostly shot by Zack Snyder, that we now realize. And I almost blame the studio more for that version than I do Whedon, because let's be honest, the studio stepped in and said, we got to put something out. Let's put something out. They weren't happy with Zack Snyder, and we got what we got. A movie that they were desperately trying to capture the humor that's brought in by the Marvel films and things like that, and try to make a little bit lighter, because they took some heat for the DC film universe being a little dark so far. But bring in the internet. Fanboys everywhere. When Zach revealed in an interview that there is a Snyder cut that is done and that was not his film, people started hashtagging release the Snyder cut. The actors in the film, Henry Cavill, Ben Affleck, all talked about it in interviews. I think all of that led to Warner Brothers being pressured to say, hey, let's get, you know, the fans want this, when you have the actors supporting it too. And then in early 2020, Zack Snyder and Henry Cavill were at a party. They were on like a Zoom call or something, and they kind of confirmed that it's coming to HBO Max. And Zack Snyder was working on finishing it and doing some reshoots and shooting about 5 minutes of new footage and put his cut together of the film. Studio gave him $30 million to finish the movie. And on March 18th, which was a couple days ago, this was released to the world, the Zack Snyder's Justice League full director's cut. The 4-hour version of the film, which was as intended and was going to be released in theaters in two parts. It was going to be released as a part one and a part two. That was apparently the plan. But we got the full enchilada, so to speak. And
oh, boy, did we.
Wow, it didn't feel 4 hours. No. I watched it over 2 days, and it still didn't feel 4 hours, though. I mean, it's such a different cut in a lot of ways. It's fleshed out. The storylines make more sense than they did in the shortened version. The characters all have their own subplots. I mean, my God, you took a throwaway character in the Whedon cut in Cyborg, and he's super important in this version. And I actually forgive Ray Fisher a little bit for all the talk he's done the last few months about Joss Whedon, because he's really good in the movie, you know, once he got a chance to do what he could do. Those are some of my initial reactions. In one word, this is certainly epic. I felt fully satisfied after watching it. Like, this is the Justice League movie I always wanted to see. And I thought it was spectacular. I thought it was really cool. They brought Junkie XL in to redo the score. And his score on this version is so much better than the one on the Whedon cut. It's dramatic. It's got themes to it. Just a much better job scoring the film than the other version. I like Affleck's Batman a lot better in this one. When he's not cutting jokes, he's more the dry Batman that we should have. Those are just some initial reactions. There's so much more to talk about. We're going to spend some time on this, folks, so bear with us. Y'all's initial reactions.
I'll go first. I was surprised that I actually really started to care about the character of Cyborg, and you know, the Whedon cut didn't do him any favors, and I could see why Snyder said that he was pretty much the heart of the film, and I saw that, and he played such an essential role, and I actually cared about Steppenwolf. The dude was a freaking absolute unit, and you actually like understood his motivations. He wanted to be redeemed in Darkseid's eye. I don't know why we didn't cut that out, but the secret to any good character is that you have to understand the motivation from the get-go. You know, not some, and that's why you understood, Steppenwolf. He's such a better villain, three times better than the Whedon cut. And you can cut, and you can relate that if you fail at something, you want to redeem yourself and you will try hard to do it. And, you know, Steppenwolf, yeah, he was an absolute monster in this, and he had a reason to do what he did throughout the movie. And what else? Darn it, I missed the random Russian family.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I'm glad they threw all that out. It was like...
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing. I was thinking back of the Whedon cut. Like, Steppenwolf just sort of had this base. It just appeared. Now it explains why the base is there, how it's formed, why the radiation from the Chernobyl site all made more sense.
Yeah. And how it all disappeared because it needed a... The radiation powered the force field. And and it was fun. You know, I was teasing a little bit about the Snyder Cut being more slow motion and more washed out colors and stuff. But yeah. I was just trolling. But the slow motion is used quite effectively for any of the Flash scenes with involving the Flash Speed Force.
That's another character that felt thrown away in the Whedon cut and is given so much more to do in this one. I'm still not a huge fan of Ezra Miller. I'm not a huge fan of Ezra Miller's Barry Allen. I think it could grow on me. I don't hate it, but I'm just not a huge fan of it. But he's given so much more to do in this movie.
Mm-hmm. And who else? The random Russian family was cut out for sure. I forgot what was another one. Like the whole... Superman fight scene where you remember in the Whedon cut, he, you know, sarcastically asks Batman if he bled, you know, and then Batman's there cratered in the ground, and the Whedon cut has him saying, "Oh yeah, I bleed." Yeah. You know, I kind of missed that little scene though. That was one thing I didn't want to see disappear. I was kind of hoping that was an original shot showed by Snyder, not a Whedon thing. But what else? I don't know. I mean, overall, I mean, fucking Wonder Woman, man. She was a savage, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah. Throwing guys against the wall, brutally beating them.
Yeah. And, you know, what she did to Steppenwolf at the end?
Oh, yeah. Ripped him apart.
Yeah. Decapitates him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right, as he slides into the portal.
Yeah, but overall, I have to say, the Whedon cut I gave a C+ or B-, you know. But this one, I think this is definitely a B+ effort by Snyder. That's my initial score, at least.
Yeah, B plus A- for sure. I would say it's definitely in that A- conversation. I kind of align my view with you, Long, the villain. Mm-hmm. I had a huge problem with Steppenwolf. I just felt like he wasn't strong enough of a villain when first watching Justice League, and I was glad to that they reversed that in this one, because like we mentioned in the last movie, Alfred Hitchcock said the better the villain, the better the movie. And that's exactly what happens here. You would definitely made the movie better by making the villain better. And then, you know, to Mark's point, you know, expanding on Cyborg and expanding on Ezra Miller's Flash, which I'm kind of with Mark too. You know, I'm not sold on Ezra Miller's Barry Allen, but I'm warmed up to him a little bit more. And, you know, after watching this performance, and Cyborg was, you know, definitely pleasant, you know, on screen this time versus like, you know, just a couch, you know, in the room, basically, and in the Whedon Justice League. But I enjoyed it. You know, I didn't want to have to watch it in two parts, but I had to. And it felt like it just moved very well. The pacing was good. And I wonder if there's going to be more steam, you know, if there's going to get yeah, if they're going to be able to get some more steam behind this and maybe bring Snyder back, yeah, you know, I think you have to.
There's a lot of other little things too, besides fleshing out Flash and Cyborg. I mean, there's a lot of little added dialogue to Batman too that made you understand why Batman felt it was so important to get the lead together. Little things they added that he said he was trying to make it right by Superman. Same with Aquaman. There's things added to his character to make it understand. The Aquaman film makes more sense now because, like, you know, he's still trying to hide from his legacy, and those little scenes in this add to his plot line too. Getting to see Bruce Wayne interact with Alfred more, which is something I felt like, you know, they cast Jeremy Irons as Alfred, and even in the Batman Dawn of Justice, I just felt like we didn't get enough. And as much as I like Michael Caine, Jeremy Irons grows on me a lot more in this version. You know,
yeah.
I thought he was really good in it. Superman coming back to life made a lot more sense. The whole way they brought him back and going into the ship and all that stuff. It felt rushed like it did in the Whedon version. It was not rushed at all. It takes almost 2.5 hours in the film before they get to that. So they really built up to that. And that would have been cool because this has been released in 2 parts in theaters. We would not have seen Superman return until we would have had to wait a year, you know, if you think about that. So all that, and then the black costume I thought was cool because it showed that Superman came back with a little bit of rage with him and a little bit of darkness, and he wants to fix things. And I was talking to Matt pre-show. This, you know, this played as a complete film up to the epilogue. You could have ended this as before the epilogue, and it's a complete film. The epilogue is what asks a lot of questions and sets up the sequels with the nightmare sequence. Really badass seeing Martian Manhunter. That was cool. Even the Green Lantern cameo at the beginning of the film was cool. But seeing Batman align in the nightmare world with the Joker and, seeing Leto come back for a little cameo. And apparently they shot that in Zack Snyder's backyard. the scene with the scene with the Joker. Seeing a little more, you know, what would have led into the next solo Batman film if they had done it, where he fought Deathstroke, you know, that was cool. So the epilogue kind of throws a lot of what ifs out there. If you, like you said, if this gets enough steam and we do get the Snyderverse continued in some way, I don't know if it'll happen. It'd be great if it does, but if it doesn't, you're gonna have those what ifs from the epilogue of the film. I rank this a little higher than you guys. I give this a solid A, almost an A+. I really thought it was an incredible version of the Justice League that I always wanted to see on film. I think that if you give Snyder another $30 million, he could have finished some of the special effects, because some of the special effects were still a little spotty, but I think that's just money. It just, you know, didn't have to do with what they had the money for. It was great that Warner Brothers even gave him $30 million to do what he did. Imagine what he could have done if he had another $15 to $20 million. He really would have made the film look great. Overall, I thought it was spectacular. It's upsetting in some ways. It's not the film we got in theaters, because goddamn, it would have been awesome to see, you know. And the Snyderverse or the DC film universe wasn't lost, and it's still not lost. You know, I think that they could still do a combined saga with all these characters and bring them together. Your biggest problem now is you waited so long. You've got your playing Edge, whether Cavill's going to come back. Ben Affleck's already moved on, you know, so it's like the only one stuck around are Gal Gadot and Jason Momoa. You know, they seem to be down with playing their part still. And I guess Ezra Miller's still going to play The Flash. They're going to start filming that sometime pretty soon, I think. They're filming The Flash movie. So some of the characters are still there, and it's spectacular though. We even got this version of the Justice League, and I liked it quite a bit. Wasn't a huge fan of the 4:3 aspect ratio at first because it was shot in IMAX cameras. There's been word that a 16:9 version will be on the Blu-ray release, but after about an hour into it, it kind of got used to it. But I have a pretty big TV, so it didn't bother me too much. But at first, yeah, it takes your eyes a few to adjust to it when you first start watching it. but, you know, the fanboys on the net are already, you know, doing the Marvel DC comparisons, which I think is ridiculous. I think this movie is good enough that it can hold its own up against a movie like Endgame. You know, because, I mean, if you think about it, in some ways, this movie is about them stopping 3 boxes, and it seems like a silly plot, but Endgame was about let's grab 6 stones and stop the bad guy. I mean, real similar in a lot of ways in the basic idea of it, you know. I mean, but that's every superhero movie. Every superhero movie has a MacGuffin that drives the plot. So I think it's, you know, silly when someone says, oh, that's a simple plot line. Well, look at every superhero movie. Most of them are like that. You know, it's the it's the characters we enjoy on the big screen and that we grew up reading and watching. And those stories are what make them exciting to watch. And this was no different. And it was a badass version of the film. I liked it quite a bit. And I put it right up there as one of the better comic book films. I think it was excellent. And it's a shame that Zack Snyder wasn't able to do that in theaters like intended. Because, I mean, where would you have ended if you split it in two parts? I'm trying to think where it was six parts. Did part three end? Part three kind of ended when the league was united, huh? Well, they hadn't brought Superman back because they bring him back like in part four.
Yeah.
It's like, I wonder where you end it, you know, and to split it. There wasn't really, because none of the chapters felt like cliffhangery, you know?
No. So, they just ended.
Yeah.
No teaser at the
end. Maybe that first brush up with Steppenwolf in underneath the harbor and they all get away. That might be where you end it. Cause then the rest of the film, they bring Superman back. You know, that probably would have been a spot.
Remember the Whedon cut? The first thing he said, "Mother, oh, where are you, mother?" or something.
Yes, yeah, so weird. No CGI mustaches, which thank God.
Oh man, that was like I really liked the opening of this version more than the weird much home better. Video camcorder of Superman's weird mouth animation.
And Batman's whole fight with the parademon and the Gotham was all kind of weird. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Much better version. And I almost want to go back and watch the Whedon version now just to see like what Whedon shot and how much different it was, because I've only seen it a couple times, so you don't remember all of it.
Oh, but there's one omission I really liked in the Whedon cut, and that's the race between Flash and Superman.
Oh, at the post-credits thing? Yeah,
that was really liked
that. Yeah, they could have left that in there. And then, am I remember right when Aquaman says, "My man," doesn't he say that to Batman in the Whedon version?
Yeah.
In this version, he says it to Cyborg.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am correct on that, right? So that's another thing that proves that maybe Fisher is right, that Whedon cut him out of the film and he could have left that in there. Cyborg saving Aquaman. It didn't change anything. I was like, I thought that played differently. So I am right on that. So,
it's almost like the Ernie Hudson treatment, huh? For Ghostbusters.
Yeah. And it's already hit the internet. People are watching the Snyder Cut, and they're realizing, they're like, maybe there is something behind what Fisher said, because he had a very important role in this film. And, I mean, a huge role. So, there's some truth behind it. But, you know, people that do bad things, you're going to get caught eventually. And if Whedon is treating people like that on set and being, whether it's racist or sexual to women, you know, he's going to get caught, as he already seems to be from the cast of Buffy and this movie and others. And I think the only thing that's strange is no one from Marvel has come out and said anything about him yet with the Avengers. But maybe in time, you know.
Justice League down. Next is Kong versus Godzilla in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, and I will report that HBO Max did well for me this time. Watching the second half this morning, it started acting up a little bit, and I yelled at it, and it started working good. But I was able to watch all 2 hours of it last night with no problems the first 2 hours. I was like, God, thank goodness for this. Because I was really, really looking
for it. Crashed yesterday.
It wasn't in America. It crashed overseas.
Okay.
Yeah, it crashed overseas when it hit their servers. Yeah, the headlines made it look like it crashed HBO Max, but it was like in overseas in China and some of those countries, HBO Max crashed. Yeah, not here. But Justice League, Snyder's Cut on HBO Max now. If you don't subscribe, spend the $15 and watch it because it's badass. I'll probably buy it on Blu-ray too, just to have it. I think it'd be cool, especially if there's a 16:9 version on there. Apparently, it's going to come out like in May, I think they said. That's cool. I think that's cool that Well, the HBO and Warner Brothers are doing that because, like, DC, some of the flack with them has been they've been putting these movies out on Disney Plus, but they're not hitting Blu-ray, and there's people that still want Blu-rays and copies, and Warner Brothers over here like, don't worry, we're going to take care of you. So, you know, because I don't think you should kill physical yet. I think there's people that still want it. So, but yeah, let's get into today's
feature. I want something to keep physically because, I mean, I heard Matt had some issue where he bought some digital copies and they started randomly disappearing on him or something. Is that right, Matt? Or is that someone else?
Oh, I've had a couple movies, not that I bought digitally, but I know I had digital copies from codes. Like, speaking of Zack Snyder, I know I had a digital copy of Sucker Punch. It's no longer on my Vudu account because I own the movie on Blu-ray, and I know I had it Vudu. And I'm like, where'd it go? So it does happen. You know, the digital copies expire. And that's why you read the fine print on when you buy a digital copy. It says that's in their fine print that they have a right to remove this film. So that's why I still like that physical.
Bitches.
Yep.
Bitches.
Well, let's get into today's feature film then. We're going to go back to the 1990s. The 1990s is such a great era for action films. I mean, you had the 80s, which had some great action films. And you thought, man, these can't be top. But then let's get into 1990, and you get these action films that are just over the top, batshit crazy, fun, but well shot, well acted, great special effects, great action sequences. The 90s are such a great action movies time. And we've done a lot of the good ones. And it's funny because three of the best have Cage in them. You know, I think Con Air is great, and then Face Off. And now this movie we're doing today has Cage again. Cage was just on a roll in the 90s. Where he was a big action movie star. And we are, of course, talking Michael Bay's The Rock in 1996, starring Sean Connery, Nicolas Cage, and Ed Harris in a diehard on Alcatraz Island, essentially, where Ed Harris plays a general who feels that his fellow soldiers have been done wrong when the government ignores them being killed and taking care of their families. So he decides to get back at the U.S. government by stealing some chemical weapons, and he's going to fire them into San Francisco if they don't meet his demands. And so Nicolas Cage is a chemical weapons expert who's brought in to consult the FBI on this. And Sean Connery plays Mason, who is a former British intelligence officer who broke out of Alcatraz and was wrongfully imprisoned. And they bring him in as a consultant as how to break back into Alcatraz to stop these terrorists. And as you can imagine, things don't go the way they planned, but it turns out to be an incredible action film. And that's essentially what the plot is of this movie. And first off, I'm going to say I really like this fucking movie. It's just as exciting watching it now as it was 20 years ago. It's probably Michael Bay's best film. It's hard to argue that because everything in this movie works. It's paced so well. It's great speeches, even if they're a little overdramatic, by all the actors. Just the way it's shot, it's moot. The cameras are moving. It's exciting. It feels like you're right there in the action. You know, you've got Sir Sean Connery just doing his thing, being a old badass. Nicolas Cage at his kind of crazy best. And you have Ed Harris, who's just great in this movie as this general who like has a motivation about him. Like he truly believes what he's doing, but he's also not quite psychotic either. You know, he's got this edge to him. And
pissed off.
You got Tony Todd in this movie. Fucking Tony Todd, man. You know, it's like he's in there. You know, John Spencer playing FBI agent Womack. He's always a good character actor. There's just so much going. There's so much. This is pure 90s, this film, but it works so much.
Michael Bean.
Michael Bean plays a Navy SEAL leader. Yeah, those are just some of my initial thoughts on The Rock. I know you guys have seen this before. It wasn't y'all's first time to watch it. Y'all might not like it as much as I do, but, you know, it's just me.
I like it. It's a fun movie.
Oh, yeah.
So was it supposedly true that that Michael Bay asked Sean Connery to play his character just like as if he's James Bond?
I don't know. I didn't read that, but I know that the studio, I know he gave Sean Connery a lot of freedom in the film, and the studio was, the movie was coming a little bit, not over budget, but close to it. And they called Michael Bay in, and you know, they were thinking about pulling him off the film and finishing it. And whenever Sean asked Michael, hey, where are you going? He goes, well, the studio wants to see me. I got to go in. And Sean's like, well, can I come with you? And Michael's like, yeah, sure. So when he walked in, Sean Connery was behind the studio, was like, oh, shit. They didn't expect. And Sean Connery vouched for him, said he's doing a good job. This is going to be a really great movie. And they were like, okay, whatever you want, go finish the movie. So Sean Connery in some way saved Michael Bay on this film, and to get it finished without studio interference by using his clout as being Sean Connery to get the film done and supporting a young director, because Michael Bay was 31, 32 years old at the time. And so that's pretty cool that Sean Connery stepped in for him and said, no, this is a good movie. And Sean Connery took the movie based on the fact that he wanted to work with Nicolas Cage. You know?
Originally, they wanted Arnold, didn't they?
Arnold read for the script and was interested in it, but they never. I don't think it's so much they wanted him. It's just he had read for it and he auditioned, but he was busy doing something else and had to. I don't know if they ever offered it to him, but I think he had to take his name out from it.
Yeah. Okay, that would have been a different film. Probably not the kind of film that we would have gotten. It would have been another Arnold-esque, you know.
The thing is, if you put Arnold in that role of Mason instead of Connery, you don't believe that Arnold, if he's a badass, is going to play around with everybody, because he can kick everybody's ass. 1996 Arnold, where you believe that Connery's an old man, he's just like, whatever, you know, he's just trying to go with the flow, huh? You know. And so yeah, I'm glad this Sean Connery in this movie, not Arnold, you know.
Yeah, he fits the bill better. British intelligence.
When was the first time you saw this, Long?
Dude, I first saw this in the theater, and it was the same summer that Independence Day came out as well. And yeah. That year of movies was really good, because, you know, I have a guilty pleasure movie in that where I actually liked Dragonheart, too, with Dennis Quaid and David Thewlis. That was a weird movie, but I liked it. Sean Connery voiced the dragon, by the way. Yeah, so Sean Connery was kind of everywhere in a way in 96, was it?
1996, yeah.
Yeah, summer of 96. Yeah, that was a pretty decent year of movies for sure. But yeah, I remember enjoying myself watching the movie. Wasn't there like a trolley scene with a black dude?
Yeah.
Like, was he singing? No, he wasn't singing. He was just, oh my lord!
Yeah,
it's just stuff exploding all around him.
Yeah.
it was a damn fun movie. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was during the car chase scene, which Michael Bay said it's one of the hardest things to ever shoot, because San Francisco only gave him permission to close off two streets for like 2 hours. They didn't quite finish filming, so they had to finish stuff around people in the streets. And Michael Bay said, man, he goes, he used an expletive and said, that's the fucking hardest thing I ever had to shoot, to try to shoot this dramatic, huge car chase scene in 2 hours. You know? And which, crazy. You know, you got set up shots and all that. The same thing happened then when they're filming Alcatraz. They had Alcatraz close to themselves for 2 weeks. Then Alcatraz reopened. So they were having to film around people visiting Alcatraz, dealing with people taking pictures of the actors and things like that. So Bay has talked about how this shoot ended up being difficult, but he also was rewarding, because the studio wanted him to shoot this on back lots in LA and studios. And he was like, no, if we're going to use San Francisco, we have to make it look real. We want to use a real Alcatraz. And he goes, we already got permission to film at Alcatraz. So the studio ended up giving in and letting him film it on location. Cause I agree, you know, San Francisco plays a part in this film to an extent. It wouldn't have been the same using back lots in LA with stock footage of San Francisco, you know, especially Alcatraz itself. You know, it's cool that they filmed this there and were actually able to film on location, because it gives the movie a sense of like you're really there, you know, whenever something's filmed at the right place. And
they built a cabin for Connery at near Alcatraz.
He requested a cabin so he'd have to go back to the mainland every night.
He's like, I want to shoot. And a cigar. And I want a cabin with my name on it. Yes, Sir Connery.
Yeah.
And then Nicolas Cage plays like this straight-laced FBI guy. He never cusses in the movie till the very end. And that was his idea to make his character not cuss. He uses like Zeus's butthole in certain parts of the movie to make him see.
What?
He wanted to,
Zeus's butthole.
He wanted to purposely overplay him a little nerdy and stuff. And but I think it's cool. It works for this character, though. This is also Michael Bay's favorite movie he's directed. It was Sean Connery, before he passed away, had talked about this as one of his favorite movies he did, too. He actually really enjoyed coming back and playing an action character, but he could pass on the role to other action, you know, stars and stuff, you know, Nicolas Cage and those guys at the time. So he thought it was fun to come back and play an action role, because he hadn't done it in, you know, I think The Untouchables. Well, I wouldn't say The Hunt for Red October is really an action role. Probably The Untouchables was the last movie he did that really had a lot of action in it, you know.
Yeah.
Even Indiana Jones. I mean, he had some action scenes in Indiana Jones, but it was more him running, trying to stay alive while Indiana saved him. And then Michael Biehn in this movie was actually, they filmed with real Navy SEALs in this film. So Biehn, who had played a Navy SEAL in several films, actually found himself nervous trying to tell other Navy SEALs what to do and be their leader. And he was a little nervous on set, like, man, I can't tell these guys what to do. I just played this shit for fake. You know? The shootout in the shower scene, every time I watch this movie, man, it's so epically dramatic, and it's like you feel bad for everything that's going on. And at that moment in the film is when you know Ed Harris's general is not necessarily a bad guy, because he didn't want that to happen. He didn't want to have to kill those, you know, the Marines and or the Navy SEALs, I wouldn't say they forced his hand, because one of his guys gets trigger happy and they start shooting, you know. But it's such a well shot scene.
It always reminds me of the scene in GoldenEye, whenever, you know, they're surrounded, you know, and the enemy has the high ground.
Yeah.
Ed Harris's character, he doesn't want there to be any bloodshed. He wants these families compensated, but he doesn't want any more bloodshed, because I think he's just tired of seeing death, you know.
Right. Well, yeah, and I think Ed Harris makes this movie a lot very interesting, because he shoots a missile towards the end of the film, but then he has it land on the water, which causes his former soldiers to start causing a coup on him, because they thought they were going to get paid money. And, you know, as Tony Todd says, where's my motherfucking money? You know, and he's like, yeah, here's my fucking money. And then they all end up killing each other basically in a shootout, because because he called, you know, he was bluffing the entire time. Like you said, Ed Harris's character didn't want General Hummel. He didn't want more bloodshed, but yet he felt his cause was a worthy one, despite not willing to kill more to get it. So he kind of plays a villain, a bit of a sympathetic villain in some ways in the movie, even though what he's doing is wrong. And what, are you going to say something?
No.
Oh, but no. But man, this movie though, and then at the end of the movie, of course, you know, they stop the bad guys, of course, as usual, and Cage saves the day, and he allows Sean Connery's character to go away on his own. He lets him escape, and apparently Mason was convicted because he found out the U.S. government secrets about the Kennedy killing, the Roswell landing, and a couple other things. So he tells him where the microfilm is, and at the end of the movie, Cage actually gets the microfilm from the church and tells his girlfriend, hey, you want to know who killed Kennedy? And originally Bay had a plan for a sequel to this where the government found out that Stanley Goodspeed knew the secrets. So he went after him and he had to ask Mason for help to try to get to Britain and stuff. But, you know, the sequel never came to play. Bay said it was just an idea. It just kind of felt, he realized it was kind of silly after the fact, even though it was an idea he had floating around. Because you couldn't really have called it The Rock 2, since, you know, you only have the movie take place on Alcatraz once.
Yeah.
But man, it's a fun movie. I really like this. I think it is one of Bay's best, if not his best movie. And I was watching it, and I even texted y'all. I go, man, why can't Bay just, you know, like Transformers is pretty good, and The Island, and his Bad Boys movie is okay. But, like, it feels like this was the top of his game for him. And, you know, he has made a couple movies. I don't know. Did you guys see 13 Hours, the story of the Mbenginzi soldiers or whatever? You know, he directed that, and it's pretty good. It's pretty close to this film as far as the style. I think Michael Bay works really well when he's making military films. You know, because even in Transformers, a lot of the military scenes are really good. You know, really well shot. You know, it's something about Bay with his military scenes are really well done, you know. And I think The Rock, I give it a solid A. I think this movie's exciting. It's fun. It's definitely amongst the best of the 90s action films.
Definitely in that conversation, for sure. Like, can be a top five, maybe it's someone's top 10. It's Sean Connery's last great performance as an action star, and he does really good, you know. The gunfighting's good. He plays his role well, and he's still this gentleman. He's the gentleman, ultimate gentleman spy, you know.
Yeah. Yay. I think I'll give it a... I'll give it an A minus. I mean, it couldn't... I don't know. It's definitely a very fun movie from beginning to end. And Nicolas Cage's character is pretty darn likable. And has a hot girlfriend, too, by the way. We should mention that. Right.
She does.
Yeah.
He does. Sorry.
Yeah. And the bioweapons he's trying to retrieve from the general was pretty heinous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was like they look like gelatinous green eggs or something.
Gelatinous green eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the cinematography, I mean, Michael Bay always has a certain flair to his, you know, picture style. Mm-hmm. And it suits him well as far as the action genre. So
yeah, John Schwartzman shoots a lot of his movies. He's a very good cinematographer.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely up there as far as his top three movies. Oh, how about Armageddon? No love for Armageddon?
No.
And a great Hans Zimmer score in this, you know, too. It kind of gives it that military action flair. And I don't hate Armageddon. Armageddon's pretty fun. Armageddon's fun once they launch the ship. The first hour and a half of Armageddon, it's just like, okay, we just want to see him launch the ship.
Whenever Bruce Willis is like, damn you, Ben Affleck, for fucking my daughter.
Well, then in Armageddon, the scene where he's like talking to his daughter and he's going to die, I'm like, God damn, this is like overdramatic and sad. It's like...
And then Aerosmith comes on.
They really played the dramatics in that one.
Dialed it up to 10.
Armageddon's all right. And what's strange is about The Rock, you know, I watched this on... this is a Criterion release on DVD.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, Criterion went through a period there where they were, I guess, just buying some films up. And I actually have a Criterion Collection DVD of The Rock. That's why I watched it on, because it's the only version I have of it. Nice. So, and actually, it looks great. You could even tell it was DVD. For being on a DVD from the 90s, the picture quality was excellent. So, you know, so... But most of the time, Criterion, it's come to be expected of that. So, yeah. Well... Michael Bay's The Rock, good film. Like I said on the post show last week towards the end, I saw it 3 times at theaters, The Rock. I'm not sure how. I know I saw it opening day, and I think my brother wanted to see it, and I saw it with somebody else. Saw it like 3 times within 5 days. No falling asleep, Matt, on the show.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Your eyes were closing, bitch. I'm going to call you out. Well, don't worry, we won't be here much longer, since we skipped the top five this week because, we just forgot. But you know what? I'm going to ask you guys a question before we do a little bit of news. We'll do a takeaway. Give me a takeaway from the director's cut of Zack Snyder's Justice League. Just something that you surprised you or found interesting, some kind of takeaway.
You first, Matt, since you were sleeping.
Yeah. I think the best takeaway is that it makes sense. Like, the movie just makes sense. It feels connected now. There's continuity. And I feel like, you know, I was very surprised by how well it flowed. Even though I was like, oh, man, 4 hours. is going to take, for friggin' ever. But, it's great. I mean, and
like the Irishman felt long. This didn't feel long.
Yes. Absolutely. And Irishman wasn't bad. I know we all like it. It just felt long. Yeah.
That's good.
My biggest takeaway is definitely pretty much echoing what Matt has just said. And I really do like the character of Cyborg more. You definitely empathize with him. That was my biggest takeaway. Cyborg and Steppenwolf's motivation made so much sense, and it helped you understood the stakes a lot better and why the team had to get together in order to oppose Steppenwolf's machinations.
Yeah, I agree with you guys, and I think I took away the fact that I'm pissed off at Warner Brothers because I really want to see the whole trilogy now. I mean, we didn't talk about this earlier, but Zach has talked recently about how the second one would have been Darkseid continually trying to come to Earth, and it would have ended with him capturing Superman, which would have ended with them realizing that you're going to have to send Barry back in time to warn Batman, which is where we get the sequence from Dawn of Justice. Then part three would have been things from the nightmare sequence that we saw where the evil Superman is the equation,
anti-life equation.
The anti-life equation is used on Superman to make him evil, and Earth is being destroyed, and they have to come together here, and they end up sending Barry back in time a third time, which causes Flashpoint and all that, and corrects everything, and they stop, and it was a scene that Atlanteans and the Amazonians and the humans all come together and defeat Darkseid at the end of part three. And everything I read about what Zack's name was saying about it, it was like, God damn it, that sounds really badass. And who knows? Maybe this will do well enough streaming wise that Warner Brothers will rethink it. And we'll see.
Well, if they want content for their platform, they better do something.
And I think if the content and then there was another interesting fact that the only thing that's a little controversy with fans is they said, I guess Superman and Lois were gonna have a son, and Superman's son would have taken over the mantle of Batman in the third one. Because even in the comics and stuff, we know Batman kind of gets killed by Darkseid, but they end up bringing him back. That was a little bit interesting, different take on things. Yeah. But who knows? Maybe we'll see. If it happens. But for now, at least we got what we got. And good takeaway. Since we know top five this week because we suck.
I'm happy with it.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm gonna give it another watch too. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, let it sink in more.
Yeah. And Michael kind of wanted to watch it, and he didn't really watch it with me, even though I told him I was starting it. So I said, well, I'll watch it with you again. Because, it's a little violent, but nothing too crazy. Most of the violence is all done in the dark. It wasn't like one of those movies where there's blood splattering on the screen,
So yeah.
Nothing he can't handle. Well, a little bit of news before we get out of here. Another superhero movie has been pushed back as Venom, Let There Be Carnage has been pushed from summer to September as movies continue to get pushed back with COVID. But according to estimates, by next week, 96% of movie theaters in the country should be almost reopened. All theaters are working on these cleaning programs and stuff that they're hoping by the time the summer movies come out that they'll be able to have movies regularly. Obviously, there will be mask mandates, things like that. Disney is kind of on standby to decide what to do with Black Widow. As of right now, they still plan on putting out May 7th. So we'll see. And I was thinking about this, and I think the best idea is to open movies and put them out there and not worry about what money you're making, but let the people decide if they want to come back. As vaccines get better and more people are getting healthier, I think people will come back eventually, maybe by Christmas time, movie going will be a regular thing again, but that's what I think at this point. Just put them out there and let people decide if they want to go,
Yeah.
I'm going to take
the Let me ask you guys a question.
Yeah.
Have you guys watched American Horror Story, any of the seasons?
Yes.
I watched like the first season. That was about it. I don't really like it that much.
Oh, okay. I was just curious because they just announced the 10th season of American Horror Story, and it's set on the coastal setting, and Macaulay Culkin's going to be in it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I watched the first season. I don't know. It was all right. It wasn't really my thing. But, you know. Yeah.
I like
Coven's, the concept.
Coven's the best. I like Apocalypse too.
Yeah. The Gotham Knights game from Warner Bros. Montreal has now been pushed back another year. People were hoping with their next-gen consoles it would be out this summer, but they want to perfect the game, make it better, so got to wait a little bit longer for that Gotham Knights game, which looked really cool when the trailer came out. Last bit of news, Disney Plus announced more Star Wars content coming to Disney Plus, and this is some stuff that people did not expect from Lucasfilm Archives. The two Ewok television movies from the 1980s, which did play theatrically in Europe, Caravan of Courage and The Ewok Adventure, are going to come to Disney Plus.
Hard pass. Yeah,
They're fun family movies. If you've never seen them, you should give them a watch as a Star Wars fan. There's actually...
It made me cringe. Even as a kid, I cringed.
I have them on DVD, and I rewatched them maybe a year ago or so. They're not terrible. They're okay. But, you know, it's cool that people
Wilford Brimley. Them. Yeah.
Yeah. But, there is stuff from those movies that ended up in Star Wars continuity, like the things that the Mandalorian rode in his show. That's from those from the Ewok movies. Those humpback looking things. They're also going to put the Cartoon Network regular anime style Clone Wars cartoon. Those two seasons are going to come to Disney Plus. The Ewoks cartoon. For some reason, the Droids cartoon is not coming. They didn't say why, but they said maybe in the future. But the Ewoks cartoon from the 80s is coming. Then lastly, not the whole holiday special, but just the animated sequence that introduced Boba Fett from the holiday special is coming. And I've seen that before 1,000 times. You can watch it on YouTube, but I'm curious. Hopefully it's cleaned up. You know, they remastered it because it's being on YouTube. I'm sure they will. Yeah, being YouTube and bootleg copies over the year, it's always a little grainy. So it'd be cool to see that sequence remastered. So that's pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool, though, they dug into the Lucasfilm archive and bringing some stuff to Disney Plus from the old Star Wars stuff. So
definitely hits on Clone Wars.
Yeah, that hits on April 2nd. Oh, that Clone Wars cartoon was fantastic. The micro series
was really General Grievous was a badass in that cartoon.
Oh, there's a whole Mace Windu episode too where he takes out like a whole fucking droid army. It's awesome.
Oh yeah, and he pounds the sand. And it, like this, he makes us huge. It's awesome, man.
Well, and then the whole idea at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith, when Grievous is coughing and all that, it's all explained in that cartoon because he gets the living shit beat out of him in the cartoon. That's why he's coughing at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith because it was supposed to be continuity. So that's pretty cool though. It's coming on April 2nd to Disney Plus. Well,
yeah,
that's all the news I got. So let's preview next week's movie. We're going to go back to 1954, talking all-time sci-fi classic, back when they would make a lot of movies based on nuclear scientists or science and the scare of the space age and the Red Scares and things like that in the 1950s. And this movie is right from that nuclear scare age, and that is the classic movie Them.
I tell you, gentlemen, science has agreed that unless something is done and done quickly, man as the dominant species of life on Earth will be extinct within a year. I repeat, stay in your homes. Your personal safety, the safety of the entire city, depends upon your full cooperation with the military authorities.
Yes, cities, nations, even civilization itself, threatened with annihilation because in one moment of history-making violence, nature, mad, rampant, wrought its most awesome creation. For born in that swirling inferno of radioactive dust were things so horrible, so terrifying, so hideous. There is no word to describe them.
We may be witnesses to a biblical prophecy come true, and there shall be destruction and darkness come upon creation, and the beast shall reign over the earth.
Yes, the earth, the skies above and the seas below, infested by swarms of nightmare creatures, crueler, deadlier than the armored giants of prehistoric eras. Here is a wild, headlong flight into terror as the desert erupts with the grim battle for survival. Here is a fear-frenzied moment of suspense as mankind totters before a thing that multiplies faster than it can be killed. Here is a desperate plunge into the black depths of the earth, where human courage challenges the brute force, the slashing jaws, the poison fangs that guard the subterranean nest where the beast spawns its terrible progeny.
To all units, condition red, drain 267 is the target area. Repeat, condition red, drain 267 is the target area.
We can't take a chance. It might poison the whole city.
Giant ants, man. I remember when I watched this as a kid, it scared the shit out of me. Probably won't now because I'm a bit older. But I'm excited to rewatch this. This will be a fun one. I grew up watching some of these old sci-fi movies with my dad, and I remember this one definitely. And
Out of the mid-50s creature features, Tarantula had to be one of the most boring ones.
Well, yeah, because nothing happens till like the end of the movie. Yeah.
The giant mantis, the attack of the 50-foot woman.
Oh yeah, 50-foot woman.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
The blob. So
there were some good ones, and them is arguably one of the better of those movies at that time.
Oh yeah.
So it'll be fun to watch it. I went ahead and ordered on Blu-ray. It should be here tomorrow or Sunday from Amazon because it was $10 on Vudu and it was $13 for the Blu-ray. I was like, fuck, I'm just gonna order the Blu-ray. And so I went ahead and ordered it so I can watch it and have a copy of it. So that's on next week's show on the Rebel Radio Podcast. And we're going to get out of here before Matt falls asleep and slams his head into his microphone. thank you, as always, for listening. Go to therebelradiopodcast.com and check everything out we got there. And until next week, be safe. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the escapee from Alcatraz.
Remember, as always, just go there and
do it.
Do it.